Oh, Wednesday says we made it to the middle of the week. Congratulations for not letting your stresses, your pressures, and all of those things that have worried you get to you. They haven't won. You're undefeated. You made it to Wednesday, and now we get to do something exceptional with it. That is the whole purpose and plan. On a Wednesday, on 93.7 The Ticket, one-on-one, DP 402-464-5685 is the Starter Heyman text line. You want to be a part of what we're doing? Hit us up. Hit us with a WhatsApp, and we will bring you into the conversation. We got lots to cover in this hour. If you want to follow us on the live streams, Facebook, YouTube, X, Allo Channel 961, and Amazon Prime, if you're Miss Jackson. Gone over. Check out Amazon Prime. Get up. Go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do it. We got lots to cover in the hour. But first, we set the tone with the standard.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash with a silver hat about his head and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
It never gets old. It never gets old. It just, man, it never moves. It's just there being awesome and stuff.
John Facenda. John Facenda, yeah.
Like the legendary voice of John Facenda and that wonderful NFL Films orchestra.
Yep.
Literally an orchestra that put together to create these masterpieces that survived time and circumstance and still. That it is the heartbeat of a sport at its highest level. It's NFL Films. Mm-hmm. And that music that goes along. Barry Thompson, the quarterback coach, Fairfax, Virginia, Fairfax Football Academy. My captain. Oh, captain, my captain.
I heard y'all talking about me a little bit, and it was so funny. Wait. Here was what was funny. Among all the things that you were spinning, Jay said, yeah, probably building houses. I did grow up building houses. That made me laugh so funny that we had some acres and stuff. And so, yeah, one of my early memories is getting the hammer, getting out there with the carpenters and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I built framed a house or two. Matter of fact, tell you the truth, I'll tell you a great construction story. My dad was really good at this stuff, and a lot of times he was the type of dad where he said, well, just go do it. And I remember there's a roller rink that he bought up in Maine, long story, and he wanted to put an addition on the back of this cement building. And we had framed a barn, and I said, well, how are we supposed to do that? And he just like I was stupid. He said, just get some 2x10s. He said, you just put a plate up against the wall. You know how to frame the bottom. I'm like, well, what about the foundation? He says, we just used a post foundation. Just dig a footer, put it in there. You frame it 16 on center. Just get it up. I was like, so we're building this thing. We're kind of, me and a guy named Brian Corcoran, and we're building it out. We put the plates up against the wall. He tells us to get these drill bits, and we do all that stuff. And we're framing it out. But the funny thing was, we're in Maine, and we were used to construction around here. And Maine people are kind of stoic a little bit. And so as we're building it, the people that were next door, they were watching us, says, yeah. Yeah, I'd use a 2x6. I'm like, 2x6, like all the construction I did was 2x4, 2x4, 16 on center, doing that stuff. And I'm like, yeah. And then they would see us another day, and We'd be working on the side of it. He goes, yeah, I'd use a 2x6. And I'm like, I don't know what these clowns are talking about. But what he was talking about was that in Maine, you need the extra 2 inches for extra insulation to kind of build it. But yeah, I've had a hammer in my hand, a skill saw, and all that stuff before too. So that made me laugh when Jay said that.
Well, I was trying to point out that there's certain types of people who really work in unique space.
Mm.
And you have to shout them out when you see them. Like, you know, they like to call them unicorns or one of one or Renaissance man or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. But to have, I don't know of many quarterbacks who were also wrestlers, who are also, you know, right.
Yeah, like, right.
It's the crossing of the streams that sometimes it requires a little difference. And, you know, I used to use this line to your son when I coached Miles, was that I don't know many quarterbacks who are poets.
Right. or who rock climb in the winter, by the way.
Right. That you go through and you say, listen, to have that insane talent at high levels in unique spaces.
Yeah.
And not everybody's built for it. Not everybody's creative that way. Yeah. Not everybody's able to stay focused. And we had the wrestlers in yesterday.
Okay.
And Barry, they talk about a thing. And that was kind of where I wanted to start with you.
Okay.
Was to have their discipline. So of these two wrestlers, I'm not sure that a lot of wrestlers are baseball players.
Right.
And I'm not sure. We had one of the wrestlers, and Lenny Pinto's a different kind of creature anyway.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But Lenny Pinto being a guy who says, you know what? If I was 3 inches taller, I'd have been a football player. Mm. And I thought, I don't know that I've ever measured that type of football player by height.
Yes.
Right? Like, I mean, some of the toughest dudes that I've ever seen, high IQ football players.
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing to do with, like, I don't know how tall they were.
You know what, DP, that I swear to God, you get inside my mind. I was just thinking today, you know, we're going to talk and what could come up. And my mind shifted to recruiting, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking about recruiting. And, you know, I haven't been a college coach, but no recruiting is it. You know, I have a lot of quarterbacks going through, and it's a lot of them are pretty fond of putting this height and weight thing on it. And I was thinking, you know, if I was recruiting, what would I be looking for? And the number one criteria on my list was competitiveness. I was just thinking, as a coach, the last thing I want to have to coach is somebody to make them competitive, to make them compete. And I was thinking to myself, I thought it through, you know, I'd have my numbers just like everybody has their numbers. But if I was looking for 6'2 and the kid was 6'1 and he was a competitive son of a gun, I'm looking a little bit closer. I'll go down an inch. I'll go down 10 pounds for a guy that is competitive, right? That wants to fight, that has that thing in him. You know, you listen to Jay talk and you think Jay's sick. Well, you know, competitors are kind of sick. They're a little bit twisted. And I'd want that. I think that'd be the number one characteristic that I would recruit, by the way. And then, you know, I'd go after. You want character and that they care and all that stuff. But I would really be looking for competitive dudes. And that guy that you're telling me about, if he set foot on the high school football field, I would convince him he could play some football too.
Yeah, I mean, like, and there are common threads in this thing.
Yeah.
That the wrestling program here has narrowed its scope in certain things.
Hmm.
Not a particular type of athlete, but a particular type of person.
There you go.
Right?
There you go.
If you're this kind of person and you wrestle, I can get you to the highest level against anybody. And I think we miss so much. We get caught up in the aesthetic that we miss the meat and potatoes, the substance of what makes Division I, high-level Division I, top five in the country programs, who they are, as we have a long group of young great ones walking by our window. Mm. It's Barry that if you tell me, and we kind of identify it in the coaching that we do, and the type of people who kind of magnet to us, right?
Yep.
Are people who want to work hard.
Yes.
They love.
Yes. Which means, and means they care, right? We use that word too, right? A person that you look at them and you just kind of look around their life a little bit and you always see this certain level of effort to whatever they're doing. It means that they care about what they're doing. It sounds like a really basic juvenile thing, but I want somebody who cares. I want somebody who innately has a great competitive demeanor, that if there's, you know, if we're whatever we're playing, that person kind of tunes up and they want to try to figure out how to win. And if you beat them, they want to go again. You may say 2 out of 3 and they lose 2 in a row. They say, okay, let's go 3 out of 5. And yep. They get that. And they go, let's go 5 out of 7. Until like, you're like, man, I beat you 4 times. I know, but this 5th time, let's go. I'm ready. I want that type of person, a person who cares. You just can go so far with a person that cares about what they're doing. They want to compete. They want to work at it and get better. You know, O-line, high school O-line coaches do this with players every year. And if more people would pay attention to how O-line coaches work with players, particularly high school O-line coaches, they are never given the cream of the crop. And they are always short. They may have 3, and then here comes a guy who's 5'10 and weighs 180, and they want to make it work. And they make it work. Mm-hmm. They make it work because when you sit in that room and you say, who's going to be right tackle, who's going to be guard, and they say Marvin, and everybody goes, Marvin. And the O-line coach says, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. Mm-hmm. Marvin will be okay. And what he knows is he knows that Marvin is a kid that's willing to work. That's all he knows about Marvin. He's willing to work. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of saying, if you're willing to work at this, I'll work at this. And we're going to go, I'm going to show you what you can do. And Marvin says, okay. And coach gets him over there and starts doing the process with him. And, you know, you get down to August and suddenly you're not talking about Marvin, you know, and that's a backhanded compliment to the O-line coach who should at that point get up and crow his chest and say, look, if y'all all did what I did with Marvin, we'd be in a state championship.
Isn't that, but that's the part that, and it doesn't matter what sport and what level. Mm-hmm. And this is why we're having the conversation.
Yeah.
That discipline and IQ matter for success
now all the time,
right? That and we don't evaluate that. We throw just mountains of NIL money,
right,
to speed,
right,
to height, to yep. weight, yep. To stats, right? Because mm-hmm. stats yep. ultimately the accumulation of a whole bunch of other things, but okay, right. It is a metric, maybe not the metric, but a metric.
Right.
And then to say, we have failed. We have absolutely failed. When we evaluate programs, athletes, development, et cetera, we have failed in not being able to identify character, integrity, heart. Like right. I guarantee you that for all the talent that existed in Oregon football and all the talent that exists in UConn basketball, that all of those things still at some point they meet yeah. and they have to exist in order for you to win championships. They have to exist.
Right. You know, I had one coach that asked me during the recruiting process, he kind of nudged me over and said, how does this kid practice? And if I was recruiting and I was close on the kid, I would not only ask the coaches how he's practice, but I would ask for some practice tape. Right? Show me a little practice tape. Yeah, practice tape. I want to see him on practice tape. I want to see a Tuesday practice. Right? How does he practice? Right? Because in our sport, we know practice is everything. Yep. And I'm just surprised that more people don't ask for some practice. Let me see him in practice. Because what you see in practice is what you're going to get, right? And this particular player that this coach asked for, he's the face of Indiana football right now, at least one of the faces of Indiana football. And this yeah. coach asked me, I said, my nickname for him is hard work. He goes, what do you mean? That's all I've ever seen him do. Every rep. If you want a half-speed rep, you got to take him out of the drill. And
isn't that the thing that listen, in the success story that is Cignetti and Indiana, mm-hmm. you also have to understand the success of Cignetti at James Madison. You have to understand the success of Cignetti Senior,
right?
Passed down to Cignetti Junior,
right?
In full modes that listen, you're going to have to be better than your dad. Your dad's really good.
Right.
But you're going to have to be better than your dad in places that your dad would never have to work.
And so what that tells you is all this stuff about facilities and this and that and budgets and stuff like that. When you see someone consistently producing results, there's two things that we know for sure. We know that he is a great manager of people, of young men, mm-hmm. a great leader of young men. And mm-hmm. two, he's great at identifying the types of people that we're talking about. He's better at identifying those people than most, right? Mm-hmm. He's above average at doing it. You know, and there's just certain coaches out there who kind of get that yes, we have these numbers, but I got to figure out, does this guy care? How does this guy go about his business every day, right? What kind of competitor is he? It matters. It matters what kind of competitor he is.
Think about this, Barry, that, and again, I love the fact that these wrestlers come in because they work. Okay. So you're a multi-sport athlete,
right?
And I can ask this question of you honestly, because yep. they say it and it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling is the hardest sport to prepare for, to recover in, to be successful in, and it's not even close.
Right. And the thing about wrestling is, they never talk about competing for your spots, because I remember when I started wrestling in middle school, and here I was kind of, you know, thought of myself as like kind of top guy, and I go out for wrestling, I'd be the top guy. And then the coach says before the match, or we'll have a wrestle off. And I go, what's that? And they said, well, you got to wrestle this guy. And if you beat him, then you get to wrestle Friday. If you lose to him, mm-hmm. then you don't get to wrestle.
Right.
Believe me, in wrestling, the parents don't call up about playing time.
Right.
They don't call right. up because you come home Wednesday with that look on your face. And then you went, no, I'm not wrestling Friday. Why not?
No.
Because he beat me. He beat me.
Right. And here's the thing.
Let me finish. And they go, well, you want to lose weight or go up a weight class? No, there's no answer. There's no answers there. The state champs are below me, and the other guy's too big. He's coming down from 190. So right. if I'm going to get on the mat, I got to make it work.
Yeah, I got to figure this out. Literally. So, I again, multi-sport athlete, I dabbled in wrestling mm-hmm. only in the sense that by most metrics at Swanson, I'm really good. I'm really good.
Yeah.
But Barry, at the time.
Yes, yes.
The yes. guy in my weight class
yeah.
hadn't lost
yeah.
ever. Yeah. And then the guy yeah. above me, hey,
yeah,
you know who you have to wrestle against? He hasn't lost either.
Right, 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 right.
And then you go, here's the decision. You can go compete.
Yeah.
In junior high, I stayed wrestling because I said, I'm going to get tougher.
Right.
I'm going to get tougher.
Okay.
Barry, go to state. Didn't wrestle in a meet all season long. All season. But I stuck it out. And here's the thing. I was wrestling against the county champion.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Get to the county tournament. And the way the county tournament worked is everybody's in the pool. Everybody's in the pool. I finished third in the county because, quite frankly, you wrestled everybody else. It didn't matter.
Hey, listen. There are two individuals that, and I don't encourage this, but there are two individuals that if you find them on the street that, and you get in a confrontation with them, you need to think twice before you go away. One is a wrestler and one is a bull rider. Neither one of them dudes, you don't, because they don't understand the word quit. Like his ear could be falling off and he's still going to get up and get in the stance, a bull rider. They're the same way. You know, they're like, hey, they're about 5'6", 5'8". The dude's 6'6". They're like, come on, baby, let's go.
Well, he said, the thing that was said was the thing that was said to the state, the county champ was, and it was Jerry Moore,
right? Yeah, yeah.
And if you walked up on Jerry Moore in July, oh, I'm not worried about this dude ever.
Right, right.
But if you walk up to this dude in December during wrestling season,
yeah, yeah.
and he's got a bruise on his face, right. black eye, his face is totally emaciated because he hasn't eaten.
Right.
And he will tell you, you're not going to have a good day today.
Right.
I'm in pain and I haven't eaten and you have to pay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you go through and it was like, you know, listen, I'm cool with taking on linebackers, all region linebackers in football.
Right.
Because I got them in space.
Right.
The
thing about taking on somebody in football is it happens, it's over, and then it goes away. The thing with wrestling is, like, it doesn't go away, especially the good ones. They're on you, and they get you, and they put the heavy on you, and they start grinding parts of your body. And if you're in the mat, they're going to grind that into the mat. And you got three, whatever the periods are, 2.5 minutes, whatever they are, and that's the way it's going to go. And they're sweating, and they're breathing in your ear. And I don't know if these guys trash talk, but if they do trash talk, you know, you got your arm behind you and the leg somewhere else. And he's telling you, like, hey, man, it's not good right
now. No, this was the thing. This was the thing. And I won't even say his name because it was just a remarkable thing that to have somebody ask me in the middle of a match where my girlfriend was. Oh, Barry. Yeah. Like, it was. Oh, man.
Yeah. Wrestlers are strange dudes. They really are. And it is weird now that you think about it. I just remember I wrestled because although I like basketball, I just like contact, and basketball didn't have enough for me. So I would wrestle and then, you know, see what's coming up next in the spring. If I'm going to do something, I was just a contact guy, you know, it is a weird combination when you think about it.
But I just think that in this day and age, and again, we're sports and teams talk about all the beauty pageant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you forget that if I'm recruiting, and Mark Manning, shout out to Mark Manning for his ability, again, in the power conference when it comes to wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? To constantly be in the top five, not really in the transfer portal that way. He's developing wrestlers. You don't hear about them in the streets. They talk about the discipline required. Hey, by the way, they never are at 100% once the season starts because, I don't know, it's wrestling. And to tell me that you can't win in football at Nebraska or in any sport, but you can win in wrestling?
Yeah.
Hey, man, you got – tell me this. Mark Manning, I want to ask him that. If you could coach football, what would you fix? Because, listen, the discipline –
you know what he would fix. You know what he would fix.
Right.
He would fix the type of people he's bringing in.
That part.
Yep.
That part. And then he said, listen to me. We had this wrestler. He wrestles at 174, down a weight from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Wrestling at 174. And he said on a Tuesday that he has gotten so disciplined and so finite about his preparation, his nourishment, his nutrition, his workouts and all those things, Barry, that on a Tuesday in a wrestle week, he is 0.5 pounds over his weight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bruh. Like that part?
Yeah.
That part?
And what you're getting at when that stuff happens is something that when you talk about discipline, there is that definition, and it's a great definition of doing what you're supposed to do, when you're supposed to do it, and doing it that way all the time. That is an important definition of discipline. But the greater, the more significant discipline is the self-discipline, right? Is there something I know I'm supposed to do? Will I do it or not do it, right? I think I heard Saban say this. And conversely, there's something I know I'm not supposed to do. Will I do it or not do it? Now, all of us on a daily basis face those things. But when we're competing, that self-discipline is the one that has to be there. I think Jay was talking about, you know, the coach kind of poked him a little bit, right? Yep. In order for Jay to respond, there was a lot of self-discipline that went on to get him to, you know, drop the mic on the 40 time, whatever that was, right? Whatever the psychology. But once he was poked, the response was, I'm going to have the self-discipline. I heard Kobe say this one time, one of Kobe's things that went by. He said that when you go to your summer workouts, you know, basketball players will say, I'm going to shoot 500 shots or I'm going to do whatever. And he said, I would write a contract with myself, write out what I was going to do. And I signed my own contract. And in the contract, it said there was no negotiation. There was no negotiation. So if he was supposed to take 1,000 shots that day and he didn't feel like it, there was no negotiation. You're going to go take that. The self-discipline is the part that really sets kids apart. You have the competitive nature of a person, the fact that he cares. And then when you're shopping in that store where those people exist, you're more likely to find the two or three that have the self-discipline to be elite. And then you're really gangbusters. And people have got to get off of that they all look a certain way. The NFL is the greatest example within certain ranges. At these different positions, all the players don't look the same. They don't look like the guys that you say that you're recruiting. They're different. If you've ever been up close with an NFL receiver, they will surprise you about how lean they are, right? You will be surprised at, like, how does this guy work? Like, doesn't he get cracked in half? He doesn't. And linebackers tend to be leaner than you think that they are. Linemen are linemen, right? They gotta do it, and they're athletic and so forth. But when you mention, they're not the same height, they're not the same weight that you would expect. But highly self-disciplined, extremely competitive individuals, and the more of those guys that you can have around your team, you know, the smarter the coach you're going to be. Yes, you want athletic talent. Everybody shops in the athletic talent pool, right? Everybody shops there. Okay, mm-hmm. So what ones do you want to pull out of that pool? You know, I think sometimes the coaches just grab, he's athletic, he's a 40, he's 6'5", just grab him. Well, what about the guy 6'4", 290? What about that guy? Can't we – he's kicking a 300-pounder's ass. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't grow the extra inch on him. But if we get him, he can get up to 310 if that's what you think you need. Yeah. Like, take him.
Yeah, it is the conversation. And it transcends all sports and doesn't really matter what space you're in, that yeah. These are questions we have to have. We'll throw it to break. Bear, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about from the coaching standpoint. The things, the discipline required to make good coaching decisions. Okay. And I think it is a lost art in being able to make good coach, the discipline required to make good decisions for your players. We'll talk about that. Welcome back. One-on-one, 93.7 The Ticket, the coach, Barry Thompson, joins us on one-on-one on a Wednesday. And we're talking about discipline because wrestling programs, high-quality programs, and sometimes it's competitive. Listen, if you're in the Big Ten as a wrestling program and you've got to face two, there are seven iconic wrestling programs in the Big Ten Conference. Seven. And the current king of the throne is Penn State. Oh, your neighbor in Iowa has entered the chat. Wisconsin, Ohio State said, listen, from a recruiting standpoint, we're going to go toe-to-toe and fight you. We're going to spend millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. And Mark Manning says, hey, listen, I'm quite frank, I'm not going to spend millions because I don't have millions, but I'm just going to outwork you. Yeah. And me and my guys, we're going to out-tough you. But, coach, make it. Decisions, discipline. And I know this for a fact about you, that coaches get in rooms, and one of Barry Thompson's least favorite things is to have a coach say, you know what we should do right here?
Well, listen, I think when it comes to coaching, you and I traded something back and forth. There's a guy that's out there, and he said, you know, when coaches go through a game, a couple games where the team stubs its toe, and maybe there's a bye week or something like that, they come up and they said, you know what, we just need to get back to basics. And this guy in this little video said, why'd they ever get away from basics, right? So in a wrestling stint, you just in the wrestling standpoint, you never get away from basics. Basics is what you're doing all the time, right? Stance and moves and all that stuff. But from a football standpoint, it's a valid thing, right? That you can get away from basics. And the basics broadly defined is, you know, are you running a program where the best idea always wins, right? That is that a basic tenet of how you're running things, or are you running it differently? So those are basics, right? How are you making decisions? Are you sticking to your basics as a coach as to how decisions are made? Moving it smaller onto the field, you can, you know, what are the basics? The basics are we want to block, we want to tackle, we want to pass the ball, we want to catch the ball, and we want to kick the ball, right? Those are the basics. Then what happens is, then the next thought is, who are the best players to do those things, right? That's basic, right? And in that mix, which seems really simple, you can get lost. Coaches get lost about emphasizing these things. Theoretically, on a practice sheet, the Indy, right, that you do is supposed to focus on the basics of the skills that you want the players to have to execute what you want them to execute, right? Then the next step becomes, do you consistently ask them to execute those things? Are you consistently coaching all the points of the things that you want them to execute? That is, if I'm a receiver, are you asking me every day, or do I have an Indy period of the things that you're going to ask me to do? My releases, my routes, what my hands are doing at the top of the route, distracted catch, all of those things. Am I doing those things? My run blocking, am I doing those things every day? Then when I get into the group period, am I executing those things, right? And it should be such that you always tell the receiver, hey, take what we did in the Indy, and I need you to deploy it here. So it's consistent. Then when that happens, you have really good football players, right? Now that you have really good football players, and I think this is where a lot of us coaches kind of stub our toe. Instead of drilling down, they start to add width. And now you're adding width when you expand the width because you think it's just so easy to get here and there. You're actually requiring them to adopt another skill, which you haven't drilled them in Indy in a lot of the cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keep it simple so that you can look at a single concept or two concepts and drill it down. Last time I gave the example of the Y cross, right? The 2x2 on the left, we got a guy running the vert, a guy running the out. The slot on the right side is going to go under the outside linebacker, up and over the mic. All right, now, the read would be you tell the quarterback to throw the out. If he doesn't, look to the hash. If he sees no safety on the hash, he'll look for the cross. If there's a safety here, he's continued to his backside. Well, all right, we're really good at Y cross. Couldn't I tell the guy run the cross to run with his eyes up, and that if he sees the safety on the hash, that I want him to stop between the void of the linebackers, because in a 4-2 box, the linebackers are going to split and there's a void. Couldn't I tell my back, instead of swinging, hey, I want you on the front side of this concept and I want you to run a pin down so now I can get a high-low on that mic and it'll increase the gap in the back. Haven't changed anything. Add a new skill. I got receivers running with their eyes up, right, and getting used to finding voids in a zone defense. And then once I've got that skill, gosh, then I can apply it to a case if they go drop eight. Now my players kind of understand, hey, this is a zone, these are the voids. I know we're running, you know, Carolina, whatever it is, but the void is right here in the middle in drop eight. And I'm going to run a shallow to take that mic out of it, so we're going to high-low him, right? Those types of things, but sometimes they're just done without developing the skill. And you put the players out there, like telling a quarterback. Here's a big thing. Getting a quarterback to understand where he wants to go with the ball before the ball snap. Where do you want to start? I got patterns on my left. I got patterns on my right, right? And I know you tell me the concepts over here, but what rules are you going to give me that say consistently, you know what, when it looks like this, I need to start over there? because I got a beater over there. I have an advantage over there, right? Without doing all these if-then scenarios, how can you lay it out so that consistently when he gets up, he has a way that here's a look that we want to check out of. Here's what we want to do. And then practice that, right? It's just, it sounds simple. I know guys are working hard on it, but I've been in enough coaching rooms where that stuff kind of gets lost. And strategically, I've been in rooms, and you've been in rooms too, where you say something that makes complete sense. It makes all the sense in the world. And they listen, and they go, no, we're gonna do something else. Versus I've been in other rooms where I've said things, and it's not just because I said it. It's because it makes sense. It either was done or not done, right? And those things matter inside the room, how those decisions are being made, who's making them. And I just think, and we talked about this a lot, if you teach today's players, you give them a consistent set of rules, whatever it is, and you teach them and you dig down, these kids are so bright that they consistently will come back and say, Coach, hey, you know, if he does this, should I go this way? And you go, I never thought about that. But, yeah, you should, right? And you've got a whole other thing opening up.
It becomes the thing where you say to people, I should never have to say in a critical situation, you know what we should do here? We should already know.
Yes.
We should already know. We should already know.
Let me tell a funny story. DB and I sometimes will talk about our days of coaching basketball at this particular high school. And at the time, it was new, and it was just a system that worked. And DP had, in his infinite wisdom, said that I should have coached this JV squad that, by the way, went on to win a state championship. Mm-hmm. And I had this player on there who was so used to coaches kind of doing things. And he said, we're rolling along. Well, we're 10-0. But he's asking me. He says, we don't have an inbounds play, you know, when we're coming from the back court. He said, what's the – like, he's trying to question me as if I'm failing. I said, get open. I said, you're a great point guard. Get open and get the ball. He goes, no, we should have a play. He says, the play's worth the point. I go, get open. That's the thing. Get open, get the ball, bring it up court. And I remember him being mad at me, but it's like that was the point. Like he was at the point where he shouldn't be looking to me in that particular situation to get the ball. Set a pick, set a screen, you played enough basketball, get open. Like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah, he wants you to get open for him.
Yeah.
We'll throw it to break. We'll come back. We'll find out what Barry Thompson has been cooking. Took it with the coach here on 101, 93.7 The Ticket. Final segment with Barry Thompson.
Oh, the funk just of it.
Get down just for the funk of it.
Barry. Yeah, baby. It's
been a good hour, a fast hour. It always is. But
I love it.
Do what we do. We understand. We have to ask the question. It's what, you know, Ric Flair had to say. He would get in these arenas, and they were always sold out, and people were always listening, and he would grab the microphone, get really quiet, and then he would ask the question, what's causing all this?
I love it. Yes.
What are you cooking?
Well, not cooking. We're going to go sauces. Two sauces that are green can kind of go with it. They're both really simple and I really try them. So the first one's called salsa cremosa verde. It's a green sauce. You have three tomatillos. Go get to tienda and get them. If you've never worked with them, there's a little husk pulled off. It's a little sticky on the outside. Just rinse that off. Three tomatillos. Going to chop them up a little bit. It's going to go in the blender. Excuse me, about a quarter of a nice sized onion. Don't have to do much to it. It's going to go in the blender. A handful of cilantro. And then decide on your heat level. Either two jalapenos or two serranos. Or two jalapenos, and you take all the seeds out or take it, whatever you do, you can adjust it. Put that in maybe about a third a cup of water and a little bit of salt. Blend that up. It is a phenomenal sauce that you can put on a lot of things. Great on tacos, but you should just try it. It's easy to make. The other one is called chimichurri. If you're not familiar with chimichurri and you like steak, you got to make a chimichurri. Again, you can look it up. The recipe should be relatively simple. Maybe two bunches of flat leaf parsley, not the curly, flat leaf parsley if you can get it. You know, however much garlic you want in it. So there's going to be dried oregano in it. There's going to be red pepper flakes, however much you want. And then you've got to decide, you know, how do you want to do the acid and the oil. So you're going to put some amount of typically red wine vinegar in it, and then typically olive oil. When you make the chimichurri, try to make it a little bit in advance, because the longer it kind of sits, the more everything gets together. You don't have to be extreme, you know, maybe an hour or so. But if you're grilling, and I think the chimichurri, you'll like it so much, you maybe start slapping it on your hamburger. So salsa, cremosa verde. Oh, I forgot one important ingredient. The thing that makes a cremosa. The thing that makes a cremosa is putting a whole avocado in it. I'm sorry. So here we go. Three tomatillos, quarter of onion, a handful of cilantro, a little bit of salt, third of water, and one whole avocado. Just throw it in the blender, blitz it. Great thing. And then chimichurri. Make those two sauces. You'll be the hit. And you'll remember that you made them when Nebraska beats Wisconsin.
There we go. There it is. BT, appreciate you, brother. Love you.
Love you too, man. Thanks for having me.
Ticket weeknights rolls on. Harrison Arns, thank you, kind sir, for doing what you're doing. Stay tuned. More Ticket Weeknights coming up.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.